From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt. Our colleague Noel is on an adventure, but we'll return shortly.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Dylan, the Tennessee pal, Fagan. Most importantly, you are you, you are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Shh. Can you hear it in the distance? That train whistle?
Oh, I did. I heard it.
I heard tell of it. Yes. Tonight we are traveling the rails, fellow conspiracy realist, exploring a hidden history of the United States, a culture that is often romanticized, vilified, and above all, perhaps misunderstood. You know, when people hear words like hobo or vagabond or traveler, dirty kid, hobo especially, I think for most of the public in the West, it conjures up this vision of itinerant men, you know, maybe not with the best, sharpest duds, but with dignity in their faces, holding sticks and bindles amid the Great Depression, which is, again, a terrible name.
Yeah, images of human beings looking for work, right? Mm-hmm. That's generally what it's associated with.
Which is the great differentiator between a hobo, a tramp, and a bum. Right. And please keep in mind that for people who historically consider themselves hobos, calling someone a bum was an enormous insult. The difference being hobos travel looking for work. Tramps travel doing their best to avoid work. Bums neither travel nor work. And that's the idea. It feels like it's distant history, but we have to remember the past is always closer than it appears in the rearview mirror. And the reality is that train hoppers still exist. According to law enforcement, there's been a conspiracy afoot. So tonight we're going to dive into this thing that we've been loosely calling Invisible America. And we're going to ask, what is this FTRA, the Freight Train Riders of America? Is it, as law enforcement says, a brutal coven of people committed to organized crime? Is it, as its supporters argue, a loose collection of communities trying to provide mutual support? Or is it, as some railroad spokespeople say, an urban myth that never existed at all?
I'm Andrea Gunning, host of the podcast Betrayal. Police Lieutenant Joel Kern used his badge to fool everyone, most of all, his wife, Caroline.
He texted, "I've ruined our lives. You're going to want to divorce me."
Caroline's husband was living another life behind the scenes. He betrayed his oath to his family and to his community.
"She said you left bruises, pulled her hair, that type of thing."
"No."
How far would Joel go to cover up what he'd done?
"You're unable to keep track of all your lies, and quite frankly, I question how many other women may bring forward allegations in the future."
This season of Betrayal investigates one officer's decades of deception. Lies that left those closest to him questioning everything they thought they knew. Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you obsessed with true crime? Then you're going to love True Crime Tonight. I'm Bonnie Movin. You might remember me from the Emmy Award-winning documentary, Don't F with Cats.
I'm Courtney Armstrong, host of the number one podcasts, The Piketon Massacre and The Idaho Massacre.
And I'm Stephanie Leidecker. I head up K2 Studios, where we make true crime podcasts and documentaries, and now we're even making movies. We've all worked together for years, and now we're trying something brand new.
We're unpacking all the latest true crime headlines with our team of experts.
We'll be covering all the major trials that are heating up this summer, and there's a lot.
And yes, we'll also be covering some of the scandals that we're all obsessed with. And you need to join the conversation.
True Crime Tonight.
We're talking true crime all the time.
He pulls out of his backpack syringes and tries to inject her.
What?
Wow. It's bizarre. It's completely bizarre, and they have to investigate it.
Listen to True Crime Tonight on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can get True Crime Tonight completely ad-free with an iHeart True Crime Plus subscription. That's available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. Plus, you'll get ad-free access to all the previous seasons of The Piketon Massacre and Murder 101. So open your Apple Podcasts app, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.
It's the early days of COVID, April 2020. A woman in a small town in Oklahoma makes a strange post to Facebook and then disappears.
I'm on day 9 of this virus and I am pretty sure it has reached my lungs. I made the decision at the onset that if it got bad enough, I would not go to the hospital.
Pretty quickly, a ragtag group of women on the internet start their own investigation.
It felt like I was living out one of like my fantasy dreams of being a detective.
But the world they uncover is beyond their wildest imagination.
How did this happen?
Listen to What Happened to Talina Czar on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something unexpected happened after Jeremy Scott confessed to killing Michelle Schofield in Bone Valley Season 1.
I just knew him as a kid.
Long, silent voices from his past came forward.
And he was just staring at me.
And they had secrets of their own to share.
Gilbert King, I'm the son of Jeremy Lynn Scott.
I was no longer just telling the story. I was part of it.
Every time I hear about my dad, it's, oh, he's a killer. He's just straight evil.
I was becoming the bridge between a killer and the son he'd never known.
If the cops and everything would have done their job properly, my dad would have been in jail. I would have never existed.
I never expected to find myself in this place. Now, I need to tell you how I got here.
At the end of the day, I'm literally a son of a killer.
Bone Valley, Season 2. Jeremy.
Jeremy, I want to tell you something.
Listen to new episodes of Bone Valley Season 2 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And to hear the entire new season ad-free with exclusive content, subscribe to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts.
Here are the facts. Matt, how would we define train hopping or freight hopping to someone who's never heard of the concept?
We call it Hell's Angels, but without bikes. No, I'm just
bikers
kidding.
Without
that's,
bikes.
That's what
that's
the,
from Police Magazine. Yeah,
that's what Police Magazine would say. Mm-hmm. Sorry, no. Train hopping is literally just somebody who is using the 30,000 miles of rail across the United States and using it as a way to move around. But not doing it as, you know, a passenger on a train would. If, let's say you get on a passenger car, you pay for a ticket or that kind of thing. It's hopping on and off of the actual freight cars that are taking various things. You know, think everything from coal to large shipping containers.
Yeah, boxcars, grainers. If you get lucky, you might be able to hop inside something nicer used by the employees of the railroad. It's called catching out when you hitch this ride. You do it without permission from the train operators or employees. This occurs all over the world. It is illegal in every state in the United States currently, and it's also dangerous, legality aside, for a ton of reasons. There are accidents, drugs, crime. You can be at the mercy of the weather, depending on which car you end up catching out on. And then there's the ever-present possibility of another rider becoming violent. Also, we got a note. First, thank you for the seasoned train hoppers we talked to in preparation for this episode. A lot of the folks that we spoke with also noted that oogles, folks who are new to this lifestyle, can be a danger to themselves and others simply due to their lack of experience. So no ill intent. It's just, again, very dangerous. You have to know what you're doing.
Yeah, you learn how to do things by doing them, right? And if you're not with somebody who's essentially a guide who can show you the ropes at any given moment, you could be putting yourself and everybody else you're with in pretty serious, and in this case, grave danger, because you're on a giant moving train, mm-hmm. or you're trying to get onto one or off of one.
Right. And it's a thing that does not currently have sensors that tell it, oh, someone's trying to jump on this as it's moving. And also slowing down a train is very difficult. It's doable. Stopping a train is an engineering feat. With this in mind, we want to be clear, folks. We are not expressly condoning this travel. And perhaps more importantly, this is in no way to be taken as a guide to learning the art of train hopping. And I would argue it really is an art. There's a lot of expertise going into this. You know, we talked about this briefly on some other episodes, but there's no shortage of resources purporting to give you advice, warnings, guides to train hopping, but they're often of dubious, unverifiable value. And the one thing most travelers agree on is this: you got to learn person to person from someone else who knows the ropes, or more appropriately in this case, the rails. So as you become more familiar with hopping and you become accepted into the culture and lifestyle surrounding it, you might be gifted with one of the most legendary books in all of U.S. history, The Crew Change Guide. Remember when we were talking about this one?
Yeah, I remember this one specifically. What do you think that means? The Crew Change Guide. Well, I mean, we can get into a lot of it. And definitely, if you haven't, go back and listen to our episode on what was known as and is still known as Hobo Code. We did an entire episode on it, I think, Ben, right?
We mentioned it in an episode. I think we did it on a live show, and we mentioned it in an episode about Hidden America, where we also talked a little bit about hidden buildings and urban centers, facade buildings.
So in this book, you're going to learn a lot about, like, again, literally the crew change, which is when people check the trains, get on and off the trains, when the crew actually changes who are engineering the train. There's all kinds of cool information in there. And it's such an interesting legendary book because it does seem like something that would literally change year to year, even season to season, even month to month, because you might have stuff that gets altered when it comes to, you know, who is actually operating the trains, when and where and all that stuff. But I guess theoretically keeping the trains on the tracks really is a thing where you need to have regular shipments of particular goods moving across, you know, from state to state, across regions of the United States on a daily basis.
Yeah. And as a result, the Crew Change Guide, originating with the legendary train doc, as he's known, the Crew Change Guide provides the specifics of when a particular rail line stops to change out their crew. Working for railroads is very difficult. There's a high bar. It's probably terrible for personal relationships, if we're being honest, sort of like working as an air traffic controller. And thank you to our anonymous correspondent who reached out about that. The Crew Change Guide cannot be purchased, cannot be posted online. You know, it is meant to be given from person to person. And as you said, it often gets updated. For more information about the Crew Change Guide, check out our earlier episode on whether or not any book should be banned. Because this one's interesting. It's been partially self-banned by the community that creates it for their own protection. It's fascinating stuff. We know it is inarguable that the number of active hoppers, or people traveling rail illicitly, it has greatly decreased over the decades. But make no mistake, there are still strong communities of people traveling this way all across the world, including the US, Mexico, and Canada, South America as well. So to understand the accusations about the conspiracy surrounding the FTRA, we got to understand the history of this hidden subculture, the concept of itinerant travelers searching for work is ancient. As soon as the idea of work started, that demographic existed. But the origins of modern train hopping are directly tied to the expansion of railroads and economic disasters, notably the Civil War in the mid-1800s. Some people will argue, like our pal Dave Roos writing for How Stuff Works, that hobo originally stood for hoboys, or guys who ate hoe cake. After the Civil War, these disillusioned veterans were cast off from larger society, and they hopped the rails, maybe for a ride home, maybe for a new horizon, right, to start life over. And we're going to see how history rhymes later on with this idea of disillusioned veterans. It's crazy, man. Think about it. How can we articulate just how monumental the railroad was? It's like up there with domesticating horses, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. If you imagine if you had to literally hoof it to wherever you wanted to go, in the United States, which is giant. And then you've got a horse now who can hoof it for you at least part of the way or most of the way. You just got to take stops to make sure the horse is good. Now you've got a thing that can take you hundreds, thousands of miles. And without you having to run anywhere, without you having to, take care of another animal as it takes you somewhere, you literally jump on a thing and then it takes you thousands of miles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We know also that perhaps due to the sheer significance of this innovation, of the concept of rail, trains were not entirely or solely a good thing. Here in the U.S., they came to represent a stark divide between haves and have-nots. The railroad network expands westward and becomes denser in the north and the east. And there's a new class of workers who are created, an entirely new class of workers employed in the transit industry. And at the same time, a lot of people from rural areas or people who have been displaced by things like, the Dust Bowl, they had a way to migrate to cities in search of more opportunity. Freight trains were an inexpensive way to travel, especially if you could hop out or catch out and not get caught. But on the other side, on the bad side of it, railroads could ruin a town's economic future, right?
Yeah.
If the railroad bypasses your town, then you receive no new travelers. They also, used slavery to build the railroads, and there was a ton of racism involving the exploitation of migrant workers.
Yeah, and I think my mind gets a little hung up on this concept of everybody in a country who doesn't have a job that is set up, that they imagine is going to be the job for the rest of their life, now has an opportunity to go and travel and work, like literally be an internal migrant worker that can go for 2 months, 6 months, a year, travel two states away and work a job that they know people are hiring for, make some good money, bring it home, and then they could go do it again if they need to. Mm-hmm. Or not even take it home because they don't have a home anymore. They just make that their temporary home, and then they can move on to the next thing. And it's almost like the lottery thing to me in a little tiny way, where if I put myself in that position, I can imagine myself thinking, okay, I can go make quite a bit of money here at this job. Then I can go and make quite a bit of money in another job, and maybe I'm going to strike it big in one of these. Does that mean, because it's a brand new opportunity every time?
Yeah, for me, I see both the desperation and the appeal, right? Let's say you get word through the grapevine, just like in Grapes of Wrath, that someone is hiring a tremendous amount of workers out west, right?
Yep.
And you are an Okie. The Dust Bowl has wrecked not just your prospects as a farmer, but the prospects of your entire region. And so you tell yourself, or you know with certainty, this is your best chance. Even if the odds are against you, a lottery, as we were saying earlier, you don't have the money for a ticket. But if you can get a solid job, then you can change the course of your family's future. We also see similar things with travelers who might go work in canning in Alaska seasonally, or travel to do cannabis harvesting, right? And then stay on the road. And that's a very common thing in the, or still common thing in the modern day. It's not as common as it was during the Great Depression. To be honest, estimates tell us that during that horrible time between 1929 all the way up to World War II, really, hobo ranks swelled to some 4 million adults, 250,000 teenagers amid them. And of course, this is a very dangerous time for teenagers, right? Who can be victimized, exploited in any number of ways. It just inspired, it left a tattoo on the American consciousness and inspired so much fiction, nonfiction, literature. I was going back through my library and I was surprised, Matt. I have more books about hobo history than I thought. And I don't know why.
I don't know. I do not have those books, but but we do, as you said, we do have lots of people in our circles who have done train hopping, who have lived that lifestyle for a while. And it's interesting to think about it way back then, right? In these times, and then think about it maybe in the past 20 years, past 30 years, just how much it has changed. And really thinking about motivations for wanting to live that lifestyle. And I don't know about you, but just anecdotally from people I've spoken with, a lot of it has to do with this feeling of not having a solid foundation where you are in your life,
right?
Where you grow up, where you stand, especially for young people, then finding a family through this. So it reminds me of our discussions of gangs and cartels and that kind of thing, which it's not the same, right? We're not equating these two things, but this sense of finding a group of people that becomes your family that you would, in this case, then just travel the rails with and explore the United States.
And I think it's important for us to have a positive note on this as we enter the train tunnel here. This is a way, without condoning it, we have to acknowledge this is a way to see parts of the United States and Canada and Mexico that people never get to see.
Yep.
There is great untamed beauty out there, you know, in that purple mountain range and so on. So there is a real appeal, and community is a huge part of it. And today, you know, you'll see widely different demographics, right? Our crust punk friends, so-called, our dirty kid pals, our anarchists who decided of their own volition that they didn't want to participate in some of the frankly ridiculous stuff that society demands of people in the current milieu. But for all of those folks, whatever their motivation, it is inescapable that train hopping is more difficult now than it was in the past. There are security innovations at train yards. You know, it's not always just a one day drunk train yard bull running around going, "Oh, you kids, blah blah blah, put you to the hooscow." You know, now there are serious security innovations, and it happens in step with growing federal concern, national security concerns. That these factors all put tighter eyes on the practice of train hopping. And now the demographic that we say this with great respect, that would historically be considered hobos, they're also sharing the rails with immigrant workers. It's another great off-the-grid transport option. And
families, by the way, not just, you know, imagine an immigrant worker. Imagine an entire family of people
trying to keep their kids safe, right? In a place where the law doesn't really exist. And then there are the thrill seekers, you know, shout out to the college kids, the Oogles, and I almost said terrorists, the tourist. To be clear, my slip there is because the federal government has raised serious, what they call terrorism concerns. There's validity to it, but there's also, you know, the T word is a magic way to get more funding.
But and then there are real dangerous individuals. Hear me when I say that. Dangerous individuals who choose the rails as a way to get around and then may also commit heinous crimes while they're doing that.
And like anybody else, they have a community. To what degree is their community united? That becomes a question worth asking. There are criminals who have gone off the grid to escape the law. And due to the circumstances, up until recently, those folks could ghost very effectively. And we're going to talk about that as well. These folks, all these groups we're mentioning have different motivations, but they rely upon the same tactics. You need a community to survive. And that's why there are loads of groups or crews or gangs, train gangs on the rail. And they are usually providing support, resources, guidance to their members. People are looking out for each other because they know there are bad things out there in the dark. So if you ask law enforcement, and we're going to have a dichotomy here between people in that community and people in the LEO community. If you ask law enforcement, they'll tell you some of these groups are dangerous. One name that came up over and over and over again is the FTRA, or Freight Train Riders of America. Innocuous name, a little bit ambitious, but it sounds clean. It sounds like a union, actually, when you think about it.
It really does. It does. Have you seen some of the patches that exist online? That
STP. Start the party.
Boy, STP, but there's also circular things that look so much like a union that say Freight Train Riders of America around the outside. And that, you know, and it just, you go, feels like I'm on a movie set, or, you know, there's another union hanging out over here.
Or I'm at the VFA, right?
Mm-hmm.
Checking out people's patches.
There you go.
So defenders will tell us this is just another group of rail riders. You can find people who identify or associate with the FTRA, and they say, we have been mischaracterized. We're a group that looks out for each other, and a lot of people are making false claims about us. A lot of people are associating us with crime. But critics, including law enforcement, and we'll talk about several of the law enforcement investigators here, critics will argue that FTRA is an extraordinarily dangerous, organized criminal enterprise. So what's the truth? We're going to pause for a word from our sponsors, and then we'll dive in.
I'm Andrea Gunning, host of the podcast Betrayal. Police Lieutenant Joel Kern used his badge to fool everyone, most of all, his wife, Caroline.
He texted, "I've ruined our lives. You're going to want to divorce me."
Caroline's husband was living another life behind the scenes. He betrayed his oath to his family, and to his community.
She said you left bruises, pulled her hair, that type of thing.
No.
How far would Joel go to cover up what he'd done?
You're unable to keep track of all your lies, and quite frankly, I question how many other women may bring forward allegations in the future.
This season of Betrayal investigates one officer's decades of deception. Lies that left those closest to him questioning everything they thought they knew. Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you obsessed with true crime? Then you're going to love True Crime Tonight. I'm Bonnie Movin. You might remember me from the Emmy Award-winning documentary, Don't F with Cats.
I'm Courtney Armstrong, host of the number one podcast, The Piketon Massacre and The Idaho Massacre.
And I'm Stephanie Leidecker. I head up K2 Studios, where we make true crime podcasts and documentaries, and now we're even making movies. We've all worked together for years, and now we're trying something brand new.
We're unpacking all the latest true crime headlines with our team of experts.
We'll be covering all the major trials that are heating up this summer, and there's a lot.
And yes, we'll also be covering some of the scandals that we're all obsessed with. And you need to join the conversation.
True Crime Tonight.
We're talking true crime all the time.
He pulls out of his backpack syringes and tries to inject her.
What?
Wow. It's bizarre. It's completely bizarre, and they have to investigate it.
Listen to True Crime Tonight on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can get True Crime Tonight completely ad-free with an iHeart True Crime Plus subscription. That's available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. Plus, you'll get ad-free access to all the previous seasons of The Piketon Massacre and Murder 101. So open your Apple Podcasts app, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.
It's the early days of COVID, April 2020. A woman in a small town in Oklahoma makes a strange post to Facebook and then disappears.
I'm on day 9 of this virus and I am pretty sure it has reached my lungs. I made the decision at the onset that if it got bad enough, I would not go to the hospital.
Pretty quickly, a ragtag group of women on the internet start their own investigation.
It felt like I was living out one of like my fantasy dreams of being a detective.
But the world they uncover is beyond their wildest imagination.
How did this happen?
Listen to What Happened to Talina Czar on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something unexpected happened after Jeremy Scott confessed to killing Michelle Schofield in Bone Valley Season 1.
I just knew him as a kid.
Long, silent voices from his past came forward.
And he was just staring at me.
And they had secrets of their own to share.
Gilbert King, I'm the son of Jeremy Lynn Scott.
I was no longer just telling the story. I was part of it.
Every time I hear about my dad, it's, oh, he's a killer. He's just straight evil.
I was becoming the bridge between a killer and the son he'd never known.
If the cops and everything would have done the job properly, my dad would have been in jail. I would have never existed.
I never expected to find myself in this place. Now, I need to tell you how I got here.
At the end of the day, I'm literally a son of a killer.
Bone Valley, Season 2. Jeremy.
Jeremy, I want to tell you something.
Listen to new episodes of Bone Valley Season 2 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And to hear the entire new season ad-free with exclusive content, subscribe to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts.
Here's where it gets crazy. All right, Matt.
Yes?
The FTRA is a real thing.
Yeah, there's
people consider it a real thing.
Yeah, there's a Facebook page and everything.
Yeah, right. That's the gold standard. Sorry. Step aside social security numbers. That's the real ID these days. Oh, I said real ID and my cat yelled at me. Yeah, I
know. Well, you can scan it now.
You can scan everything. I don't know if it's the right world to live in. But anyway, the FTRA has been most active. Not solely active, but most active in the Northwest United States and in Southwestern Canada. So that's why you may sometimes confusingly hear a similar Venn diagram term, FTRC. That means Freight Train Riders of Canada. And it is so tough to find an origin story for FTRA that everyone agrees on, partially because it's tough to find a description of the FTRA that everyone agrees on. And yeah. Even now, or even in its heyday, right, as far as reporting and investigation goes, railroad spokesfolks were saying, this is an urban legend. Police are trying to do something that makes their job easier. But I suggest we go to Police Magazine with an excellent article by Richard Valdemar that shares one of the most popular origin tales, and maybe while we go through it, we can provide a little bit further context.
Oh, yeah. Would you mind if I read a short little excerpt from that same article? I think it's the same one, November 2007. Okay, man. And this, if you read the entire thing, which we highly recommend you should, it's called The Freight Train Riders of America. You can find it online. It feels like a hard-boiled detective novel at times, and some of the stuff in here, it has been. You said it's tough to know what's real and what are just stories being told around various police departments and sheriff's offices. So this is what he says, and this is corroborated by several other people, but they do. I don't know if you found this too, Ben. They mention this specific article often when it's like mentioned in Wikipedia or something. They'll cite this article, which is interesting because for all intents and purposes, this is one person who has experience writing about it, right?
I've also seen it. This is why I'm excited about doing some clarification and contextualization, because I've also seen this article mentioned by people who do not agree with it.
Oh, yeah. 100%. So that's why it's kind of, All right. Well, he says the FTRA is rooted right after the Vietnam War. There's a group of disaffected veterans who come home. They don't want to live life the way everybody else wants them to. They are in a specific bar in Montana. It's the 1980s. They are, I believe at the time, they're already unhoused. And they decide they're going to basically just be a group. They're going to work for each other, with each other, and they're going to, it's a specific railway, right? Or a line.
Yeah. The Burlington Northern Santa Fe Pacific Railroad line, the High Line.
That's right.
And this, let's pause here. Cause okay. So it's the 1980s when these guys meet. So they've all served and survived through the Vietnam War. Like so many other veterans, they're having a tough time reintegrating into a society that you could argue threw them away, threw a great many veterans away. And these are demographically mostly white males. We know that for sure. And like you were saying, Matt, they, according to the origin story, they throw their fates together and they say, let's work together to essentially improve quality of life for each other, to support each other. And we're going to share everything and we're going to keep it a family show, but they do mean everything.
It gets pretty,
kind
of gross. Talk about sharing women specifically and stated in that article.
Violating human rights, similar to a one percenter motorcycle gang. I do want to shout out some internet scuttlebutt and some accounts that, again, we're going to keep anonymous from different conversations that we both have had. The idea is, if you want to get specific about the origin of the FTRA, you'll hear people say it started at this bar in Whitefish, Montana, but you'll hear other people say, no, it started in Libby, Montana. Mm-hmm. And you'll also hear that the original guys were not criminals. In fact, their argument is that they were banding together to protect themselves against violence in that environment.
So let's remember our previous discussions of returning Vietnam War veterans and the varying degrees to which they were hailed as heroes and or shunned by other Americans who were on, you know, U.S. soil when they returned home, as well as, you know, some of the good things that were in place by like the Veterans Affairs Association, as well as the really bad things that promises basically that were not kept. Mm-hmm. And just that experience, you can imagine, at least I imagine, making an individual pretty angry, or could has the potential to make someone pretty angry and fear that they may not have any kind of future.
Yeah. And the we have to also remember the context of Montana at the time. For years and years, decades and decades, we could say a century plus, Montana had been a kind of haven for what law enforcement would call transient individuals, right? And again, that's law enforcement's word, not our own. You'll often hear people in that community prefer the term traveler. So the issue was that a few bad apples ruined the bushel for everybody. As a result, legislation in Montana is passing laws that vastly exacerbate criminal penalties for stuff, such that you don't have to be, if you are an unhoused person, you don't have to be caught red-handed, you know, watching the wheels and figuring out when to jump on the train. You can just be sleeping nearby and then they can put you in jail for months and months and months. And they know that you'll probably get acquitted because you didn't really do anything wrong, but they will keep you in lockup for that time. Because what are you going to do? You're going to get a lawyer? No, you're not. Not a good one.
Oh, yeah. Well, and just also quickly, the dangers of, let's say, sleeping in, oh man, I think in this article, maybe it's in a different article, they refer to them as jungle camps.
Yeah, the jungles.
But really just camps that are nearby to a rail access point, right? But just the dangers of sleeping there that we've seen over time. The police talk about it. The people who have actually, you know, traveled to talk about how dangerous it can be, because literally anybody could be on that train, right? Coming through, whether they're law enforcement or not, whatever they are. And if their intentions are bad, you are in an extremely vulnerable position.
100%. Yeah. The authorities, if you decide to go to them, may simply arrest you. It may not help you. Right. And this is an issue that occurred back then and occurs today. And I remember it's something that came up a lot when I was doing some volunteer work in similar areas there. The distrust of authorities comes from a very valid and extremely smart place, to be honest with you. It is a rational and intelligent decision. The FTRA, again, according to the scuttlebutt here, you'll hear that the original crew did not, they were not these super criminals. They weren't teaming up to be like the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, but perhaps as a knock-on consequence of the loose nature of the organization or the covenant there, the FTRA had a new wave of people coming in. These were more hard cases. These are ex-convicts. They start calling themselves the new FTRA. And that's where we get to the three divisions, right? By the skanks or the bandanas, which would be the black bandanas. That's what we're talking about, the high line, the blue bandanas, aka the wrecking crew, and then the red bandanas that are more southern, like Louisiana to Long Beach.
Yeah, it's really interesting to separate them out by the Southern Corridor, the Midwest, you know, and like it's interesting to split them up that way. We have heard stories of people who have ridden the rails not associated at all with the FTRA who state wearing the black bandana is still a very popular thing in the areas where the black bandanas are supposedly worn by the FTRA. Which is really interesting. And it's a way to associate yourself with other people who ride the rails, but it is not specifically gang related.
Yeah. Because again, confirmed members of the FTRA, defined as people who say they're members and then get that confirmed by other people who say they're members. That's really the best you can do on an org chart here, because it's people connected by a similar lifestyle. And they're so loosely organized that people do not always agree who is actually in the FTRA. And to that earlier point, it is a known fact out there that some people will falsely claim membership for protection purposes or for intimidation or just for bragging rights, just to like sound cool at the fire, which is not a smart move at all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or intimidating to someone that they are worried is attempting to intimidate them, right? That kind of like little thing that you would say, like, watch out.
Yeah, dude, we live in Atlanta. You know, if you're not a Crip, if you're not a Blood, then don't say you are. It is a really dumb idea.
Yeah. This is another really interesting thing that I was having a discussion with somebody about earlier. This official association with like those two well-known gangs, right? There are smaller gangs that have associations and sets, right? But then there are other ones that are like claim association or might say they're associated or wear the same colors or do that kind of thing. And it's just, it feels like a very dangerous game, first of all, to do that.
My favorite line about that, just tangentially related, was from an old Eminem song where he says something like, "I'm walking through the hood wearing blue and red. Like, I don't see what the big deal is."
Jeez.
It happens, you know, it's cool. I've been in a lot of situations, as you know, and probably one of the funniest, weirdest ones when our office was in a different part of town, I went into that local Target and I was accidentally wearing a red shirt and khakis.
Yep.
Yeah. And then a customer yelled at me.
Happens to me in Best Buy with blue all the time.
Really? Still?
Yep.
Do you do it on purpose now? Is it just like Discordianism?
Blue. I'm just wearing blue all the time.
You're repping it. So whatever the true origin of the FTR may be, we know that they expanded, or things calling themselves the FTRA expanded, not just in purported membership, but in areas of operation to those, you know, that rough three categories of regions, and their reputation expanded in step. More and more often, people were saying, these are dangerous men. These are the kind of men you should never cross. And in fact, avoid them if you can.
Yep. Yep. That's what we've seen. I have also heard stories that FTRA members, when it was a thing, and we're not talking very long ago, you just avoid. It's like, I don't know. It's kind of weird to me, and it's weird to make this association. The way the police describes them, we joked about it at the top, like a biker gang, basically,
right,
without bikes. But if you just imagine seeing a group of people that look not that friendly, you just do whatever you can. Just, I'm going to stay away from them as much as I can.
Yeah. Never pick the fight. You know what I mean? Just realize that sometimes the fight might pick you. And FTRA is full of pithy sayings that are attributed to the group with things like, what is it? All on one, one on all. Meaning that if you have a problem with one guy, then everybody is fighting. And this is going to be, this gets sticky because there have been revenge homicides between FTRA members, right? For different slights. And let's go to the crimes. Okay, so again, this is coming to us from the lens of law enforcement. So there's definite narrative and perspective at play. One of the most prominent investigators you'll read about concerning the FTRA is a retired Spokane police officer named Bob Grandinetti. He had a long career in the law, and after his experience with rail-related crimes and incidents, he specializes as a retiree in exploring the nature of this group and the alleged crimes. And so in his work, he links a large collection of criminal acts through the 80s, 90s, and up to the 2000s, links them to FTRA or folks he believes are associated with FTRA. And, you know, some of these crimes, honestly, are a bit pedestrian when we're talking about living off the grid, things like food stamp and benefit fraud. It's not that uncommon. And theft, of course. Who doesn't love a good heist? But then we're talking drug trade, assaults, a little bit of human trafficking, and of course, homicide. And the most concerning cases, the most extreme cases, concern proven serial murderers.
Yeah, there are actual human beings that were serial killers that rode the rails as part of their crimes, as part of their MO. Does that mean they are FTRA? Well, let's find out, because there is one specific person that kind of matches up with Grandinetti's, you know, findings in his police work, as well as kind of the mythos of FTRA. Is this guy named Robert Joseph Silveria Jr. And he's known by a bunch of other names as well, including the Boxcar Killer. And we'll tell you about him right after a word from our sponsor.
I'm Andrea Gunning, host of the podcast Betrayal. Police Lieutenant Joel Kern used his badge to fool everyone, most of all, his wife, Caroline.
He texted, "I've ruined our lives. You're going to want to divorce me."
Caroline's husband was living another life behind the scenes. He betrayed his oath to his family and to his community.
"She said you left bruises, pulled her hair, that type of thing."
"No."
How far would Joel go to cover up what he'd done?
"You're unable to keep track of all your lies, and quite frankly, I question how many other women may bring forward allegations in the future."
This season of Betrayal investigates one officer's decades of deception. Lies that left those closest to him questioning everything they thought they knew. Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you obsessed with true crime? Then you're going to love True Crime Tonight. I'm Bonnie Movin. You might remember me from the Emmy Award-winning documentary, Don't F with Cats.
I'm Courtney Armstrong, host of the number one podcasts, The Piketon Massacre and The Idaho Massacre.
And I'm Stephanie Leidecker. I head up K2 Studios, where we make true crime podcasts and documentaries, and now we're even making movies. We've all worked together for years, and now we're trying something brand new.
We're unpacking all the latest true crime headlines with our team of experts.
We'll be covering all the major trials that are heating up this summer, and there's a lot.
And yes, we'll also be covering some of the scandals that we're all obsessed with. And you need to join the conversation.
True Crime Tonight.
We're talking true crime all the time.
He pulls out of his backpack syringes and tries to inject her.
What?
Wow. It's bizarre. It's completely bizarre, and they have to investigate it.
Listen to True Crime Tonight on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can get True Crime Tonight completely ad-free with an iHeart True Crime Plus subscription. That's available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. Plus, you'll get ad-free access to all the previous seasons of The Piketon Massacre and Murder 101. So open your Apple Podcasts app, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.
It's the early days of COVID. April 2020. A woman in a small town in Oklahoma makes a strange post to Facebook and then disappears.
I'm on day 9 of this virus and I am pretty sure it has reached my lungs. I made the decision at the onset that if it got bad enough, I would not go to the hospital.
Pretty quickly, a ragtag group of women on the internet start their own investigation.
It felt like I was living out one of, like, my fantasy dreams of being a detective.
But the world they uncover is beyond their wildest imagination.
How did this happen?
Listen to What Happened to Talina Czar on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something unexpected happened after Jeremy Scott confessed to killing Michelle Schofield in Bone Valley Season 1.
I just knew him as a kid.
Long, silent voices from his past came forward.
And he was just staring at me.
And they had secrets of their own to share.
Gilbert King, I'm the son of Jeremy Lynn Scott.
I was no longer just telling the story. I was part of it.
Every time I hear about my dad, is, oh, he's a killer. He's just straight evil.
I was becoming the bridge between a killer and the son he'd never known.
If the cops and everything would have done the job properly, my dad would have been in jail. I would have never existed.
I never expected to find myself in this place. Now, I need to tell you how I got here.
At the end of the day, I'm literally a son of a killer.
Bone Valley, Season 2. Jeremy.
Jeremy, I want to tell you something.
Listen to new episodes of Bone Valley Season 2 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And to hear the entire new season ad-free with exclusive content, subscribe to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts.
We have returned, also known as Sidecar, Sidetrack, Boxcar Bob, Boxcar Killer, as the media dubbed him. This man is currently serving double life sentences in Wyoming for crimes that he does confirm he committed. He was convicted of these two murders in different states, pretty far away. Before he was convicted of these and incarcerated, he spent more than a decade and a half riding the rails and apparently, per his own reports, killing at will. By the time investigators wrap stuff up, Silveria had confessed to 28 total homicides scattered across the United States, right? And he also, from his argument, he was killing the vulnerable younger people. He was also killing older people who already had government benefits. So the idea is that he was killing for profit, but he... the story still is murky. What he's saying does not one-to-one match up with the results of investigations or even with his own earlier claims. He himself denied being a member of the FTRA. So he said he didn't do it, or he said I'm not in this. I was just riding the rails. But then other people who said that, again, we have to caveat it, who said they're FTRA members were like, oh yeah, Boxcar Bob, that yep. guy's a monster. We know him. We want to pull his patch because of his terrible behavior. Pulling the patch means expelling someone from that loose organization.
Again, to that motorcycle club thing,
right?
That's just the connections are there.
Do you think he was FTRA?
I don't know. I haven't found enough on him. Just there's a lot written about him, and specifically about, you know, his crimes and specifics of, you know, Roger Lee Bowman and the human beings that the lives that he took. But there's not a lot of details about him, and you got to either trust him or trust the people that are, you know, picked up and talking about him.
Right. Like one book we read for this is Murder on the Rails, the mm-hmm. true story of the detective who unlocked the shocking secrets of the boxcar serial killer. That's by William Palmini, who has firsthand experience in the investigation. So if you want to read more, that is a fantastic place to start.
Yep, absolutely. And there are a couple of different ways that you could become a really well-known criminal in the U.S. Nowadays, a true crime podcast might get made about you. Hey, now you're... We all coughed as we continued making true crime podcasts. Back in the day, there was this little show. Well, there still is this show, and you can find Payne Lindsay, our pal, on the show right now.
Shout it out, yeah.
America's Most Wanted. Mm-hmm. And if you went on that show, well, you became well known.
Right. And even if you didn't want to be on the show, which is weird because a couple of people who were on that show as suspects, they did want to be on
it.
They got off on that thing because, you know, they're messed up. But the FTRA as an organization probably did not care for the shout out, but they gained national attention because they got that profile on AMW, and Silveria's brutal nature drove that. So his heinous acts are how the larger public outside of Invisible America learned about this organization. And then we have to introduce a couple of other cases. Matt, there's one that you and I both found. This is disturbing, and it's also heartbreaking because this guy was forced to ride rails when he was 14 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking about Michael Elijah Adams, right? Yeah. AKA Dirty Mike. And this guy claims to have killed more than 16 people.
Yeah. Yeah. And the interviews that he gives when he's in lockup are chilling, because he says he killed more than 16 other people, less than 30, and he does not have any regrets at all.
Yeah.
He is different from Silveria because he proudly claims association with FTRA, and he further said he had been taught how to become a serial murderer by a guy named John Dogman Tony Boris. Boris himself was convicted of some crimes. Police believe he was an FTRA enforcer.
Which is, I mean, again, it's possible. And how would we know? I think maybe that's my big question. Mm-hmm. How would we know any of this is happening if there wasn't some kind of deep surveillance going on within some of these groups? Because they can move so quickly from crime scene to anywhere else, right?
There's 100% infiltration. Yeah. That's another hidden industry, right? Maybe the stories about fictional characters going deep cover sound ludicrous, but it is a real industry. With outlaw biker groups as well, with any number of suspected gangs you could imagine. When the FBI was going too hard on calling juggalos a criminal enterprise, they had juggalo infiltrators. Can you imagine how much fun it would be to be the juggalo infiltrator at the gathering? You don't have to pay for the ticket. They put you in the helicopter, I bet.
Yeah, but you're putting really nice people away probably for stuff like having meth.
You shouldn't do it. Yeah, just let them go. You know, like the cool bulls at the train yard who just say, guys, just go back, sleep in the jungle. Don't do this on my shift. You know what I mean? Yeah. Which are real conversations that happen, you know? And a lot of the, tell us if you work in the railroad industry, but at least without getting too specific, in a lot of urban areas, the rail employees who are not security kind of have a don't ask, don't tell policy. You know what I mean? If you're not making trouble, then I'm not making trouble. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, but the FTRA allegedly was making trouble, at least according to reports back in the day, including pretty major thefts. And I don't even know what you call that, like taking serious amounts of freight off of trains sometimes.
Yeah.
Other times, like there were a couple instances where a train was derailed and then an alleged FTRA member was like found dead in the wreckage and it caused the derailment, like purposefully, but accidentally died in the crash. A couple other, you know, versions of that where a train is stopped purposefully, you know, at a specific place.
Breaking Bad style.
Well, yeah. I mean, it reminds you of the trains being robbed on horseback back in the West, right? And those old tales, but just doing it in a new way.
And then the question becomes, are these unified, organized acts by a single group or a group of related communities, or is law enforcement pinning these things together because it's more advantageous for investigation? You know, that's a big question.
Might get some dollars pumped into the department.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
Yeah. And maybe some promotions along the way.
Hey, you know what?
Let me get my shoulders here real quick. So I'm brushing my shoulders satirically, not seriously, folks. So that you're right, though, Matt. The headlines of this time period, they get pretty shocking themselves. AP, the Seattle Times, again, centered here in the Northwest, they feature stories with titles like "Racist Hobos Slaying Rail Riders, Police Tracks Gang of Elusive Drifters."
Jeez. And
yeah, that's from the 90s, so that's more the heyday. The authorities say, look, FTRA is real. We suspect this group has killed at least 300 other folks riding the rails in the past decade, and we think the group has 2,000 members.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it's striking fear, right?
Right.
But then there are also real other serial killers out there that were fairly recent within history. We're talking 1990s, sometimes in the 2000s. Back in the 90s, there's this guy. I think he would say his name, Angel Maturino Resendiz. I don't know exactly how you would say it. You can look him up. He's linked to at least 15 murders, not of just people riding the rails, but of people who live near railroad tracks, people who were out near the tracks one night when he happened to be there, like a pastor and his wife while they're sleeping at home, right? So there are real individuals that are terrifying that make you feel and should make you feel the way that title makes you feel.
Right.
But the groups of people that title is trying to make you afraid of maybe are non-existent in that way, or at least operate in that way at one time, but don't exist now. But it's to me, it feels like an attempt to make us, anyone who would read that, fearful of the rails themselves and of any possible trip we might want to take. I don't know. What do you think, Ben? Is it a way to just keep people from trying to do this, from just riding the rails?
Some of it, yeah, it has to be. But I'd say I appreciate the point that this is simply a convenient circulatory system for people who want to do evil things. Or it was at the time, right? Mm. So for obviously law enforcement, I don't think is being purposely misleading. They're putting a little bit of English on the billiard ball, but they're doing that because they genuinely believe what they are saying, you know.
Yeah.
And they're careful to say, we estimate this many deaths, we estimate this many members, But it's also, it's challenged by an easy analogy exercise. All right. There are 323, there are more than 323 US residents now, right? That's a lot of people. So if one of those people travels somewhere else and does a bunch of evil shit, then does that mean that the president of the United States co-signed it? Does that mean, you know, if there's a guy from Atlanta who becomes a famous, like, non-consensual foot tickler, like he just busts into hotel rooms and tickles people's feet because he's weird and disturbing.
Hey, that, remember we talked about a guy who did that very thing?
Yes. I'm trying to find a non-murder example that's still really creepy. But yeah, if you heard that guy is like from Atlanta, you would typically say he's from Atlanta. But if you said he's associated with Atlanta,
he's an Atlantean. He's an AT alien.
That makes all of us look really bad. You know what I mean? So there is, I think, a logical gap there. And maybe that gap comes from desperation, dude, because the reason they say they're racist is at the time of reporting, they were saying, we believe some of these homicides are for criminal gain, some are for revenge, and some are just racially motivated because we think these guys are white supremacists. FDR self-identifying members have later denied this, of course. No one's going out and saying, yeah, you got me, coppers. But we know, and this is something you and I specifically have dealt with in a lot of investigations on other shows and in personal life, police are facing tremendous issues when they're trying to figure out what happened in these deaths, right? And maybe that is what drives some of these breathless headlines and some of these increasingly, I'm not going to say exaggerated, but I am going to say ambitious claims, right, about size and level of sophistication or organization. I mean, train hopping is dangerous. Even if you have deep experience in it, folks can be injured. They die every year in the process. This happens all around the U.S. Yep. And then when you find the body, depending on what happened, it can be very difficult to prove whether it was an accident or foul play. Did that person fall asleep on the tracks? Did they pass out due to inebriation? Did they get pushed? You know?
So really quickly, two scenarios, right? You're an investigator. You find a body. It's on the side of the tracks with on an embankment, right? Mm-hmm. This body has bruises all over it and is deceased and doesn't have anything of note on it, like no identifying information. Right. There's no evidence around it. It's just a body there, right? In the two scenarios, one, it's you, right? And you just accidentally fell off the train when there's an embankment there and you fell down. All those bruises are due to you falling and all the debris and stuff you hit. Scenario two, you get brutally beaten to death on that train and then you get thrown off that train by a group of people. The investigator is going to have a really hard time proving which of those two scenarios is true unless there's specific, you know, DNA evidence left behind by a killer.
Right. Did they beat the brakes off of you or did you die due to your own negligence or just due to
just an accident?
An accident of act of God, if God exists. I mean, yeah, and that's another point I want to go to. The second thing that I think is really important that you're hitting on there is travelers in these demographics often won't have ID or a permanent address. You're hearing us pass out nicknames or street names for some of the people we've mentioned. That's not meant to be a cutesy, cool, or edgy thing. That helps avoid investigators figuring stuff out, you know?
Yep.
That's why names like this proliferate.
Some of the people out there might be a child who is trying to get away from a really bad situation at home. So they use a different name. So nobody that they talk to or meet can end up contacting a parent or, you know, an uncle or something that would be bad news for that person.
Right. That's something that is tremendously important for us to hit on, because I know we have a lot of fellow travelers in the audience tonight. Many don't fall for broad brush stereotypes saying, oh, here's a rich trust fund kid who just wants to cosplay a very difficult life. A lot of people are coming from places where they have no other recourse. They're driven to this existence. And it is tremendously important to exercise, at least in my opinion, to exercise empathy for that. And you may have met these people and you may not have known, because it's their story. It's not ours. But we know, back to this idea about lacking a permanent address, lacking ID, whether through choice or through necessity, some people can simply be, to borrow the phrase, the name of a band I love, rail yard ghost. They don't really exist on the grid. So it can take weeks for maybe someone to happen across a body, per your earlier two scenarios, and therefore identification can be very difficult. When foul play is suspected or obvious, let's say like a bunch of stab wounds or a gunshot, this means the assailant, because it took so long to find the body, the assailant can already be in the wind, yep, states and states away, you know, and very difficult to find.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It really is important to exercise empathy for every potential angle you could be coming at the story from, right? Because those investigators really are, like, that person that we talked about at the very beginning in Police Mag, Richard Valdemar, when he's writing that story and talking about all that stuff, he and everybody he's working with are looking for someone who is serial killing homeless people in camps. Like, and we're talking dozens of people, not just a couple. And they are doing everything they can to find out who that is and to stop that person, right? And then you imagine just that pursuit could bring on all kinds of different things that we've been discussing throughout this episode, right?
All well-intentioned too. This is the thing. Imagine how damnably frustrating it must be if you're good police and you're trying to solve a murder, right? Or you're not even, you don't know if it's murder. You're trying to figure out what happened to this poor kid whose body was found in the train yard. And then over and over again, you get stonewalled by your own people because no one cares. It's a homeless person. They don't have ID. You know what I mean? This is not a high value case. And that's also further, I would say, similar to serial murderers who predate on vulnerable or fringe communities. That's why those monsters get away for so long, right? Because they're killing Black people in the time of segregation, right? They're killing people in the gay community in the time of rampant homophobia. This is a systemic problem. This, I mean, that's another conspiracy. But right now, for FTRA, law enforcement will predominantly, from the DOJ on down, they will tell you that FTRA was this hidden network of organized crime operating in and out of states, to quote Dennis Reynolds, like a demon's whisper. Some rail companies will still tell you it's an urban legend trying to link unrelated crimes for, you know, not super ethical motivations. Or, as members of the FTRA claim, it's a decades plus attempt at character assassination. We're a mutual support group. We're not wealthy people. Please stop tying us to these evil things. But where's the group now, Matt? What about the rest of the folks out there in the boxcars, the grainers, and so on?
Well, okay, so what I've heard, scuttlebutt that I've gotten a hold of, is that the original FTRA members are, you know, older now, like quite a bit older.
Yeah, 70s, easy.
Yeah. But there are other groups of people that are, I don't know how you would stylize them, just a, you know, small group of people. They would be considered a gang probably by a police organization. But there are several out there that operate that, again, people tell me you just stay away from those people as much as you can.
Mm-hmm. There are also rules, to your point, Matt, that can apply to many situations, even seemingly dissimilar situations. One of those is always, in a new environment, realize that you do not know who you are speaking to. And that person you're speaking to may seem very, very cool, may seem charismatic, may ask you to do stuff, but you always need to keep your head on a swivel. I don't want to encourage the slippery slope of paranoia, but a new environment is not a familiar environment, and people's personas can change on a dime. you know, and something, it's something to be very cognizant about. You'll see a lot of advice too, from people with experience who would say specifically in the jungle, don't try to flirt with a lady you don't know, because you don't know who she's affiliated with. You know what I mean?
That's and right.
Things that might seem disrespectful can have immediate and brutal consequences.
It reminds me of Kai Lawrence, aka Kai the Hitchhiker, aka Caleb McGillivray.
Wop, the, wop, wop.
That dude back in the day we talked about. There's a Netflix special on him. Mm-hmm. The guy that nearly killed Jet Simmons McBride with a a hatchet, I think, or
yes,
axe or something that hatchet. He had. Yeah.
Wop, wop, wop.
Yeah. It was a very interesting thing, just how the complexity of an individual.
Right, right. And this is where we have to ask about the future too. Right now, the future looks grim for the historic practice of AKA hobo traveling. Train hopping rates have massively dwindled. In 2011, a Highline spokesperson, Gus Malonis, said, look, the FTRA and overall train hopping culture have, quote, largely gone extinct, end quote. But there are people out there right now who disagree, because some of us may be listening to tonight's show on a train. You know what I mean?
That would be so cool. If you're doing that, kudos. Mm-hmm. But also, we do not condone that behavior.
Yes. Do you hear us, HR? We did the bit at the beginning and at the end. So, can't get us. Anyway, we want to end by thanking everybody who made this possible. Tireless efforts of investigators, rail employees, travelers who provided Matt and I with firsthand accounts of a world most of the public will simply never see. And I think we also want to take a special moment to thank travelers past and present that reached out to us in our little show over the years, as well as providing your own insights on tonight's episode. Please be safe out there. If you have related stories, we want to hear them. We know anonymity can be mission critical given the nature of this travel and given people's backgrounds. So if you do decide to reach out to us, we will do our best to keep your private info safe. Anyway, with that, come on over. Tell us the stuff they don't want you to know. You can find us online. You can call us on the phone. You can hit us up at our good old-fashioned email address. Over on the rails of social media, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show, or some derivation thereof. And over on your telephonic keypad, we have an address as well.
Yes, dial 1-833-STDWYTK. It's a voicemail system. When you call in, give yourself a cool nickname, one that nobody can identify you with, and then let us know within the message if we can use that name and your message on the air. If you'd rather use your words in written form, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
the entities that read each piece of correspondence we receive. Be well aware, yet unafraid. Sometimes the void writes back. Always like to slip a little Easter egg in here for our friends who listen to the end. If you are interested in this episode and want to learn more about subcultures that exist off the grid, please, please, please check out our pal Jake Hanrahan's newest endeavor, Away Days. It's available now on YouTube. We're friends with Jake. He's not paying us to say it. He's just great at what he does as a journalist. So check that out. Stay tuned for more announcements of that nature in the future. In the meantime, join us here in the dark. Conspiracy at iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Are you obsessed with true crime? Then you're going to love True Crime Tonight. I'm Bonnie Movin.
I'm Courtney Armstrong.
And I'm Stephanie Leidecker. We've all worked together for years, and now we're trying something brand new.
We're unpacking all the latest true crime headlines.
We'll be covering all the major trials that are heating up this summer.
And yes, we'll also be covering scandals that we're all obsessed with.
He pulls out of his backpack syringes.
What?
Wow. It's completely bizarre.
Listen to True Crime Tonight on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can get True Crime Tonight completely ad-free. That's with an iHeart True Crime Plus subscription available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. So open your Apple Podcasts app, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.
It's April 2020. A woman announces on Facebook that she has COVID and won't be seeking medical attention.
I didn't want to be talked out of this plan.
Then she disappears.
Anyone else think this is strange?
I just had to know. How did this happen?
Listen to What Happened to Talina Czar on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Andrea Gunning, host of the podcast Betrayal. Police Lieutenant Joel Kern used his badge to fool everyone. Most of all, his wife, Caroline.
He texted, "I've ruined our lives. You're going to want to divorce me."
How far would he go to cover up what he'd done?
The fact that you lied is absolutely horrific. And quite frankly, I question how many other women are out there that may bring forward allegations in the future.
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something unexpected happened after Jeremy Scott confessed to killing Michelle Schofield in Bone Valley Season 1.
Every time I hear about my dad, it's, oh, he's a killer. He's just straight evil.
I was becoming the bridge between Jeremy Scott and the son he'd never known.
At the end of the day, I'm literally a son of a killer.
Listen to new episodes of Bone Valley Season 2 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.